First Palm Media. You are listening to Mushing on First Palm Media. Visit our website at mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert, and you're listening to Mushing. And tonight I have on a guest calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska. Her name is Josie Teer. Josie, how's it going tonight?
Good.
Well, thank you for joining us here on the podcast. I'm excited to talk to you about your Iditarod journey and everything in between. But before we do that, can you do us a favor and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're all about, please?
So I have been basically got started mushing in the lower 48. And so I have had dogs for about 18 years. Got my first dog, a Siberian Husky, when I was 9, trained her to pull. And then, as often happens, that kind of led to progression into sled dogs, and started racing when I was 12. And then had my own dogs for a bit, and then came up and handled for Erin Burmeister in Indiana for the 2012 Iditarod season. And then went back down to the lower 48, which I was based kind of in Idaho mostly, and then in Montana later. And kind of grew my kennel into more of a distance type kennel, and did a bunch of 200 and 300 mile races down in the Northwest with the Bear Grease over in Minnesota. And then now I'm happily moved up to Fairbanks through the help of a good friend of mine, Jesse Royer, and running my first Iditarod.
And that is coming up very soon for this rookie Iditarod run, and I'm excited to talk a little bit about that. But before we do, I am very interested in your dogs and where they come from, what lines, how many do you have, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so my dogs they're basically, most of my team are dogs that I have bred and raised myself. I guess you could say they're kind of my own lines, but I had a foundation female from Jesse, and then dogs from a guy named Scott Smith, who I think he's retired from mushing now, but he's in Willow. Have, of course, being in the lower 48, some swimming lines mixed in there. And I think that is about it as far as the ones I've bred. And then one of my friends ran his rookie year last year, Jed Stevenson. And so I have a couple dogs from him. And I don't actually know the three of them. One of them had come from me, but three of them, I actually don't know what their bloodlines are, but they're sweet, good, hard pulling dogs. So I don't really care. They're moved down the trail nicely. So.
And how many dogs do you have in your kennel?
I have 26 dogs.
26. And when you are training for Iditarod, you talked about coming up and handling for Erin Burmeister in 2011, 2012 for that 2012 Iditarod that he did. Was your job back then primarily as a handler, or were you running dogs on your own down in the lower 48 and then came up to work with him and then went back?
I was running dogs on my own prior, so I basically ran my dogs, and then my mom actually watched a couple of my older dogs, and I came up and handled for Erin and then went back down and continued running dogs.
So when you're racing down in the lower 48, you said that you spent primarily your time in Idaho. What type of races have you done in the last almost 20 years? I'm sure you've done quite a few of them.
Yeah, so I started out, being a junior musher. We didn't have junior races. And so I did basically like six dogs. It was like 2 days of 25 miles each day, that sort of thing. Almost a sprint, but it was called mid-distance down there. And then I did the junior race in the sky, kind of as I was aging out of junior mushing. I did my first overnight, and that was 100 miles. 8-dog race, and then went from there, came up and handled for Erin, and then ran 200 and 300 mile races pretty much exclusively since that would have been 2013.
Did you run any qualifiers when you were working for Aaron's Kennel?
I did not do any racing when I was working for Aaron. So I was supposed to do the Two Rivers 200 that year with the yearlings, but unfortunately it got postponed for too much snow. So it got pushed back and I was already scheduled to leave and come back or go back home to Idaho. And so I did not race the team.
Yeah.
So my first races in Alaska were this year.
So yeah, snow has been interesting here in the last few years. Down in the lower 48, they've canceled just about every race because of lack of snow. And here we are, we have plenty of it in South Central Alaska. Unfortunately, a lot of it has melted this week. What do the conditions look like right now for Fairbanks?
It's been 40 degrees. Everything was super icy. And then we got a couple inches of snow. So I've been busy doing a lot of tours. So I haven't been out on my trails a whole lot, but I think they're still probably pretty good. Probably not icy now that we got this nice snow on top, but they definitely were pretty icy.
Yeah. With Iditarod just being about a week and a half or so away at the time we're recording this, are you pretty prepared, ready to rock and roll?
I think, you know, there's, you can, be overconfident, but I feel pretty good as far as the training. There's not any extra training I can do now, you know, that's going to make a difference. So hopefully everything that we have done leading up to now will stand us in good stead as we head out on the trail. But I'm pretty happy with the team. I trust my dogs. I have a pretty tight bond with all of them, and we've been through a lot. They've done a lot of learning and growing this season, so pretty excited to see how they tackle the Iditarod, the big one.
So with your preparations this year, you said that there's been a lot of learning and growing. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so coming from the lower 48, there were things that, other than the four that I have that finished with Jed, my dogs hadn't really seen overflow, they hadn't seen glare ice, things like that. And so, you know, we're kind of tough mountain dogs from, you know, Idaho, Montana, you run in the mountains. And so they're tough dogs, but they aren't used to some of those kind of obstacles. And so we got to see some of that, see some open water, see, you know, overflow, not just here in training, but also in the races that we did earlier. So the Copper Basin and the Yukon Quest in Alaska. And so it was pretty cool to see even, you know, two-year-olds kind of grow and learn how to navigate some of those challenges. And so it makes me pretty excited to take on, you know, some of the Iditarod challenges and see how the dogs continue to improve.
I remember talking to Jed after Iditarod last year. I think I had him on just a week or two after the race, and I asked him those same questions. How did the training that you did down where he was from there in Idaho and training in Oregon and those races around there? And he says, all of those hills down there really trained me for that first third of the race, you know, going over the Alaska Range and all of that, because it's a much similar terrain. I'm sure you would agree with that, right?
I haven't seen the first third of the Iditarod Trail yet, so I can't really say, but I would guess that it probably does now not, you know, having trained in the lower 48 this year. I'll probably have a little different perspective, but we do have a lot of hills up here in Fairbanks, and so we train quite a bit in those hills, and so I think that will definitely help for the going over the Alaska Range.
And you had mentioned that you did the Yukon Quest and the Copper Basin as a couple of your qualifiers. Can you tell us about those? How did they go for you?
Yeah, they weren't qualifiers. They were kind of just training runs to get ready for Iditarod. So basically those, you know, both went, I think, pretty well. I was very, very happy. The goal, you know, is always to get through, you know, on a race when you're using it for a training run, you know, you're running it a little slower pace. You're trying to make sure the dogs have a really good experience, and it's you know, fitting into whatever your training schedule or plan is at that time. And so I was pretty happy, you know, Copper Basin is a tough, soft trail. I have big dogs, and to be able to finish with a full team of 12 dogs and no injuries, no issues from that was pretty exciting. Pretty happy with that. And then the quest, that, you know, that one was more of, you know, seeing, like I said, the summit, seeing the overflow, some glare ice. So I was really, really happy to see those things and the extreme cold, because that was something that we just don't really get a whole lot in the lower 48. And so to be able to be out there and know that I can take care of my dogs, I didn't have any issues with frostbite or anything for me or the dogs. And so that was pretty good experience, kind of a confidence builder, I think, for both me and the dogs.
Speaking of that extreme cold, during that race, which was just a couple of weeks ago, crazy weather, here it is 40 now, and it was dang near 40 below at the beginning of the month. A lot of teams pulled out of the races, and they have several different classes on those races up there. How did you make that decision to continue to run? Because so many of those teams said, you know, we have other things on our plate, such as Iditarod and whatnot, and they said that we're going to hold off. How did you come to that decision of to continuing to go?
I mean, it wasn't really ever on the table to not go. I think, you know, it was a race that I wanted to do. I didn't see any, you know, like I said, we didn't have any issues with frostbite, you know, on the dog. I have the good coats. I have the gear that we needed. So it wasn't even really on the table. And really, if anything had kept us from going to the quest, it would have been non-dog related issues, because my truck caught on fire the week before. And so I went to the race with a U-Haul trailer and kennels. So if anything was going to keep us from racing, it would have been something like that, versus, you know, being cranked off by the cold or anything like that. I just, you know, obviously you're being safe out there. You're not doing anything crazy, but these dogs are built for the weather. They've got the coat, and then you're adding, you know, all of the other things, the foxtails and the blankets and dog coats and straw. And so they did really well. I wasn't worried about them at all being out there.
My goodness. You said your dog truck caught on fire. How did that happen?
I was driving home with a load of stuff for Quest and Iditarod food drops, and something burst, and I think the transmission, something to do with the transmission, and caught on fire. And you know, the truck wasn't completely engulfed, but it was very much dead.
Wow. That talk about overcoming adversity. And that's what happens a lot when you're preparing for these big races, and for something like that to happen is truly remarkable. So you showed up to the race with a U-Haul truck. We're talking like a moving truck, the big box truck, right?
No, they have little, you know, like pickup trucks, because I wanted four wheel drive for my handlers driving over, you know, some of the passes and stuff. So we did a little trailer that we could fit crates in, and a pickup truck, and we just used that. It wasn't ideal, but it worked.
Well, I can imagine there's typically a sign in those trucks or in those trailers that says, make sure it is perfectly clean when you return it. Otherwise, you have to pay a deposit. I am sure that that you guys did the best that you could with that before you turned it in.
Oh, yeah, it was just a little, you know, it's not hard to clean it. They weren't in the, you know, inside the cab, so.
Right.
Wasn't too bad.
So with that race there, obviously that's probably, is that your last race that you've done up to time of recording?
It is, yep.
So aside from the cold, how did that go, and how do you think that prepared you for Iditarod, since we were talking about those lower 48 races coming up first?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there was overflow, there's glare ice, there's a little bit of wind up on top of Rosebud, and so I think, you know, I think any experience that you have with your dogs that is pushing them, you know, maybe it's something they haven't seen before and you're able to go through it, you know, and they feed off of you. So if you're confident and we're just going to go conquer this mountain or conquer this overflow or whatever it is, they kind of feed off of that. And so even if it's not something that we end up seeing in Iditarod, which I'm sure we're going to see all those things in Iditarod, but if we weren't, it would still be, it's a big time to kind of grow your bond with your team. And so I think any, you know, and it's the same with a training run. I think anything you do with your dogs can either be kind of helping you or hurting you. So there's always training experiences. But I think a big part of it was just teaching them that, yep, there's going to be some things we haven't seen before. And they didn't bulk at all. You know, they just did exactly what they were supposed to do. And, you know, they, some of the younger ones might look back a little bit and like, hey, what is this? They grew, and you can see when they conquer something and we get through the glare ice or whatever, they're, you know, wagging their tails all happy because they know that they just accomplished something that was pretty big for them. You know, it might not seem big for us, but for dogs that haven't seen it, it was a big deal. So I think in that regard, that was the biggest thing out of the quest.
Hey, and that's why they call them training run or qualifiers or whatever that you're doing for those races. It truly is not only to prepare you for the race, but also prepare those dogs as well. If we could switch gears a little bit, you talked about when you had the issue with your truck that you were getting supplies ready for drop bags. And for folks that are not familiar, that are listening, when guys get ready for Iditarod, they have to put all of their drop bags together a couple of weeks before the race because they get sent out along the trail. And I know that this is your rookie run, and I know that that's a huge process to get all of that stuff together. Can you walk us through that a little bit for our listeners that may not know exactly what that process is?
Yeah, so for like the Iditarod, there's 19 checkpoints that we're sending gear to. And so you're filling basically 50-pound feed sacks full of everything that you are going to use along the way. So, you know, there's some gear that's going to be in your sled, like your sleeping bag, your snowshoes, an axe, a cooker to melt snow, those sorts of things. Those are always in your sled, emergency food. But you're sending out, you know, extra dog booties, all the food you're going to feed along the way for you and the dogs. And so you have to package that up a couple weeks before the race so that the Iditarod can fly it out to these checkpoints because they're pretty remote. And so basically, you know, for me, you know, booties and all that stuff kind of started lists a while ago, starting to kind of figure out what I wanted to use, and then tested some of the different treats and things for the dogs and even for me, my nutrition in some of the earlier races. So like the quest was the last chance to do that. And then package it all up and send it out. And hopefully you don't forget anything. Because once you send those out, you seal them up and send them out. Like right now, they're gone. That is what I'm resupplying. So if I forgot anything, I'm going to be carrying it in the sled the whole way. Because I won't have the opportunity to send out more gear.
So with that, did you forget anything that you know of right now that you know you have to carry?
Not anything off the top of my head. One thing I did want to send out that I'm kind of disappointed I forgot was I was going to send out those disposable cameras. I was going to take, you know, old time pictures.
Right.
And I was going to send one out to my leg, and I totally forgot until like the day after we took drop bags in. And so, yeah. And I'm not going to carry like 20 cameras with me. So
yeah.
Use the phone.
You'd fill your sled with all of those cameras if you had to do that.
Yeah.
For yourself, yeah. You know, a lot of people send out the same stuff for their dogs in terms of, you know, supplies and food and whatnot. But it's always so versatile, I guess is the word, of what you send out human-wise. What are you packing for yourself along the trail? And do you have anything special, a special treat or a special piece of gear that may be different than everybody else?
I mean, I think, yeah, it does vary a lot depending on the person. You know, obviously you have to send out what you'll actually eat, and that can be a challenge because sometimes what you want to eat at home isn't what you want to eat out there, even on the training run. But I have a friend who's a nutritionist who's kind of helped me figure out some different food ideas. And one of the big things that we looked at was things that don't freeze, because I like to eat a lot when I'm out on the trail, because I feel like then I come into a checkpoint, I'm not as hungry, and I'll still send out a meal. Like my main meals are pizza and ramen noodles this year for in the checkpoints, but doing a lot of eating and things out on the trail. So do a lot of protein shakes, protein bars. Probably my favorite trail snack is white cheddar popcorners, which unfortunately Costco did not have them when I went to buy my stuff for the drop bags. So they won't be with me on the Iditarod. I had to get some rice ones that are similar, but that's my favorite trail snack.
So you said you had a nutritionist that helped you out with protein shakes and all of that. Are these pre-made shakes that you can either melt in your cooker or whatever? I asked this question over on our Facebook page for Mushing Magazine, and one person said one of their favorite treats is to send out ice cream, and they put it in a Ziploc bag and they cut off the end or whatever, and they enjoy ice cream on the trail. Is that similar to your protein shakes, or is it different?
So I just buy the protein powder at Costco, and I just use my warm water, so snow water or whatever. And just, it is pretty easy because you're already, heating that water up. And you're keeping your cooker clean anyway, because you don't want bacteria to get the dog sick. So, it's not anything real special.
So you're making these shakes on the trail itself. So kind of using a shaker cup or something like that, like you would at home. So one other question in regard to Iditarod before we talk about a story or two about your dogs. Obviously, this is your rookie run. You haven't seen a lot of the trail. But what are you most excited about heading into the race? Is there a particular section of the trail? Obviously, you want to make it to Nome and finish and all of that. Is there a checkpoint that you're excited to see or what?
I'm really excited to go over Rainy Pass and see, go through Dalzell Gorge and kind of get through the Alaska Range portion. I love running in the mountains. That's one of the things I love about Fairbanks, is you've got the White Mountains and stuff to train in. So I think that part I'm really looking forward to a lot. And, and then of course it's going to change and you're in the, on the Yukon River, and I haven't run a ton on rivers, but, just mainly this year a little bit. So I don't know, it's all new. So I'm just really excited for the adventure of it. I think the whole thing, there's probably going to be parts of it that I was like, man, I was really excited about that, or, really dreading that. And I'll probably get out there and it might be a totally different spot that I'm, like, man, I'm going to dread that next year. but mostly I think the Alaska Range portion, I know it's really beautiful. I've seen a lot of pictures from mushers going through there, so I'm pretty excited to see that myself.
Yeah, that spot does look amazing. And of course, like you said, going through the gorge and down through the steps and all of that, there are stories to be told there for sure. So let's talk a little bit about one of your dogs. I think you said before air that you have 26 dogs in your kennel. You could probably tell a story about every one of them. They're probably all your favorites. But do you have a favorite dog or a favorite story you'd like to share?
Yeah, so I mean, every dog is different. They all have their own personalities, but that's one of the fun things about mushing. And I think one of the real special dogs on my team, my oldest dog on my team, I have a pretty young team, and so he's 7 years old. His name is Tide. And the cool thing about him, he's kind of a survivor. He's not very big. He's only about 45 pounds, and he runs in wheel. And as a puppy, Parvo's kind of a big deal. And so he got very, very sick as a puppy, and he survived that. And then he was still, just always kind of a small pup in the litter, and wasn't that great when my harness broke him. And so he didn't get to do, if I'm doing three races, he didn't get to do the one we were focusing on. He got to do, a different one. And he finished his first 300-mile race, ran in wheel the entire time. And That was his first race, and then he's just kind of never looked back. And the funny thing with him is he looks like a healer a little bit. And so a lot of times, especially down in like Montana, it's cattle country, people will be like, oh, is that, you know, is that your pet dog? And he's not, but he acts very much like that. He's very protective of me. And so he's kind of the one I snuggle with. He likes to snuggle next to the sleeping bag. So if I'm camped out on the trail, one of my favorite things about him is that whenever we're stopped and we get going again, I'll be like, are you ready? Kind of get the dogs going, and he'll do a little hop in the air, and then we take off. And so I always know that Hyde is ready to go, and he always does his hop. He hasn't ever not wanted to go.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. Is he going to make the team? I know a lot of people are juggling at the last minute, but right now, is he on the Iditarod team?
Oh, he is 100%. I only have 16 race dogs. I have a pretty small kennel, you know, 26 dogs. That's including some retired dogs and a couple puppies and yearlings. So Tide is on the team, and hopefully he'll make it all the way to Nome.
That's awesome. So I have two more questions for you before we close. It's the questions I asked just about every one of my guests, and I hope that you don't mind answering those. The first one is, where do you see the sport of dog mushing, Iditarod, sprint mushing, dry land, whatever aspect that you're thinking of, where do you see the sport in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think that a lot of the, like that, you know, 100-mile type races, I think those are going to continue to grow. I feel like there's kind of a trend with more and more of those, you know, 100-mile races. And I think that, you know, with dog mushing, there's a lot of it. It kind of depends what the sport and race organizations decide to do, you know, with their races, because there's constant, just like any sport, there's constant growth that needs to happen, changes, things, you know, adjustments that need to be made. And so I think one of the important things for distance mushing, which will kind of probably be a piece to where it goes in the next 5 or 10 years, is kind of how those distance races grow and get more people in. And I think a part of getting more people into those long distance races is having, you know, 100-mile races, having some 200-mile races, because it's a stepping stone to go, you know, 100-mile race is different than a 200-mile race, and a 200-mile race is a bit different than a 300. And so I think making sure, you know, if those races can kind of keep feeding people into the distance racing, then that'll help the sport to grow as far as the distance aspect. I don't know a whole lot about mushing or sprint mushing and dry lands, but for distance mushing, I think that's going to be important.
Well, that's definitely a good perspective, and very similar to what a lot of Iditarod mushers say. You have to have that qualifying piece, obviously. Otherwise, you just can't jump into this blindly without a lot of backing experience with that. So speaking of which, obviously Iditarod is firmly on your radar right now at the time of recording, but what's on tap for you afterwards? Are you planning on keeping up with Iditarod? Are you going to do anything else afterwards, like the Kobuk 440 or anything like that?
My handler's doing her first qualifier, which is the T-Dog here in Fairbanks, 200 miles. So that'll be the last race that my team does. And then I do tours. So I'll be headed to Juneau and working with Alaska Ice Field Expeditions all summer again. After that, as far as next year, I mean, we'll just have to kind of wait and see. Iditarod is kind of the big focus, and I haven't really thought a whole lot about next year yet, but I'm definitely, I mean, I'll still be mushing. Definitely want to go back and do the quest again. And that's probably the only thing that's for sure about next year, is definitely want to go back and see that trail again.
It sounds like you are ready to rock and roll. I wish you the best of luck out there on your first Iditarod run. I'm sure you will do awesome, especially with the amount of experience that you have. 18 years is a long time. You aren't one of those guys that just came up and decided to run Iditarod a couple of years ago and then jumped into the fire. So I think that you'll do pretty good with that. So my last My last question for you is, where are you most active on social media? I think you and I connected on Instagram. Is that your spot, or is it Facebook, or where?
I have Instagram and Facebook. I think a lot more of my videos and stuff are easier to upload onto Instagram, so that's probably where you'll see more. And that's just there and back again, Sled Dogs. That's probably the main spot, but yeah, Facebook and Instagram are the two places people can follow.
And I will make sure that we share all of your links over on your show notes page. And with that, thanks again for joining us tonight. Josie Teer is our guest, and this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.